getting you home every weekday evening. 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
This is Cambridge 105.
So let's get our election panel underway. We've got two guests sitting in front of me. Another one just arrived in the green room. So first of all, say good evening to Anthony Carpin and Hester Wells. Anthony, I've been wondering how to describe you, Anthony, for most of the programme, and I've kind of just decided on what you say on your Twitter page. It must be correct. Social media trainer and community activist.
Yeah, in a nutshell.
A good political commentator as well. And Hester Wells is here from the Cambridge Cycling Campaign, and you had your hustings last night, I think.
Yes, we did.
Right, so we'll talk about that amongst other things. It probably would help if I faded your microphone up to get things underway. So, Anthony, let's start with you, shall we? And I was looking earlier at some of the tweets that have been made by local candidates, specifically in the, I think mostly in the city council, but also at county council elections. It's rather despondent, really. I don't particularly want to single out a particular party, simply because I just, you know, hit lucky or unlucky on those I saw this afternoon. But it seems to be very little comment on the issues that, in theory, they're hearing about on the doorstep, and quite a bit of it seems to be just making cheap shots from the national stage. You know, they're local politicians. Surely they should be saying something which is relevant to the city of Cambridge.
I think because the campaign in Cambridge is ever so tightly contested, and we've seen that from a number of polls that have been done recently in the city, my sense is that the parties that are contesting the city, in particular the Lib Dems and the Labour Party, are playing things relatively cautiously. So they're not taking huge risks, and so therefore, in particular with things that come from a national level, are sticking very much to a script of, in particular on the Labour side.
So you think they would have got something from central office, head office, whatever one might call it, or maybe even just like the regional party offices to say, these are the issues we want you to talk about, just push this out in your own style?
Very much so.
So what do you make, you know, for example, I've got one, and again, I don't particularly want to single out, but I'm, you know, we've got things like Cameron thinks people are easily duped, not so, you know, another criticisms come in the opposite direction. And then one which I saw basically tweeted the same thing twice within the space of about a couple of minutes, which this one here, don't wake up to a Lib Conservative UKIP alliance, you know, and then the same thing said again, you know, clearly not sure how social media worked and whether or not the tweet had actually gone through.
Well, I think this is where the hustings and the debates are really coming into their own, because rather than taking the national news lines that are coming from the headquarters as the stimulus for debate, more and more people are now going along to the hustings and seeing some of the videos that, for example, Richard Taylor and myself are filming, and are coming to their own conclusions and are starting to have some of those conversations as a result.
Let's maybe talk. John Vale is with us now from the Cambridge News. Hello, John. You made it through the traffic.
Just about. Yeah.
It was a nasty one. It was tonight. You know, it does sort of. You never really have a good one on Cambridge roads at this time of the evening, but it did seem particularly sticky, at least on the screens here.
You're spot on. Yeah, I can tell you from an eyewitness on the ground, it wasn't the best. So for the politicians that are listening, more action, please.
I guess we'll talk about transport and cycling with Hester a little later on. But I guess all of you, in one shape or form, have gone to the hustings over the past few days, particularly Hester, who was organising that one, or part of the organising team of the Cambridge Cycling Campaign yesterday. You know, what are the issues that the local councillors should be talking and tweeting about, other than these cheap shots on the national stage? It'll go, Hester, first?
Well, obviously, I think that cycling is one of the issues. So although we had a hustings for the parliamentary candidates, transport's actually controlled at the county level. There aren't county elections this year, but ward councillors play a big part in advocating for transport schemes and raising the issues that their constituents have. So transport is certainly something that I would expect local councillors to be focusing on. And it's, I think transport and housing are the two really big issues in Cambridge. And of course they're related, because the cost of housing pushes people further and further out of Cambridge. and travelling into Cambridge for work every day.
Yeah, we'll come to housing a little later on in the hour with John. But just on this issue of funding for cycling, one of the things that always is quite difficult to work out when the announcements are made is to where the money's actually come from. So we've had a number of improvements, either both ones which have been put in place. I guess Hills Road is one example of that, and there's other schemes which are in the process of being developed. But it's difficult to know, really, from, you know, everybody seems to be claiming the credit for it as to whose money is it? It's obviously our money at the end of the day, but it's come from national funds or local funds?
Different schemes are funded in different ways. So the Hills Road and Huntington Road, and there's also the scheme for Trumpington Road and three or four sort of just outside Cambridge, South Cam's schemes. Those have come from the Cycle City Ambition Fund, which is something that the most recent government has done. It's a large amount of money that's been spread around, I think, about eight cities and other areas.
And this is one of these things where people have to bid for in order, hence the lobbying you were mentioning from the councillors.
Yeah, the council officers bid for it. Actually, in this particular case, the conditions put on the funding meant it had to be put in so quickly, actually, I think by April this year, so presumably so there was something to show from it just before the election, put a lot of pressure on local officers to come up with and consult upon and deliver schemes very quickly, which is one of the drawbacks of the funding and one of the issues, one of the problems with stop-start funding, which was one of the questions at the hustings yesterday.
So what's stop-start funding?
So when you've got a pot of money and you're given it and you don't know if you're ever going to get any money again. So it means that if you can only afford to do a small stretch of a road, for example, you know, you don't know if you're ever going to be able to complete it and realise the full benefits.
Oh, I see. So I guess in some ways it could force you to, crystallising the mind, doesn't it, to make sure that, you know, that junction or that bridleway or whatever it might be that the locals think needs doing is actually done. You don't go off and do something, oh, we'll do that next, because you're not knowing where the cash is coming from.
You need a complete network. You know, everyone makes different trips every day. If they have a route that only covers half of your trip to work, that's, you know, could be next to useless if you don't feel safe on the.
I was going to say
you
go halfway along the route and then all of a sudden you're going off onto a main road and end up being squashed by a lorry, which is no use to anybody.
Yeah. Well, or one road.
This was also one of the issues that came up at the Be the Change Cambridge events that I organised, as well as something that was raised as part of the city deal, John. Julian. This and one of the challenges that several participants put to everyone at those events and also to the city deal is to get us to think as a city and to do some problem solving on how we solve our traffic and housing problems as a city. So, for example, rather than doing piecemeal developments or piecemeal improvements such as, you know, a development along Hills Road, for example, the cycle lanes that we've got there, is to actually say, well, let's look at the entire city and see which are likely to be the best places for cycle-only routes or which are the best routes for the roads to come in, for the buses to come in, rather than say, we'll just do this short improvement on Milton Road or wherever, just to think differently and do differently how we do transport improvements.
Mm. But it's tricky, though, this, and John, you'll have seen this whole issue which keeps on coming up, and it is one of these things, it's almost like the Cambridge equivalent to the European Union debate, and that's to whether or not we need a unitary authority, if we keep as it is, and there's so many different arguments to both sides on this.
Mm. Yeah, I think there is some consensus starting to emerge. Again, we were all there last night, and all four candidates said that a unitary authority for the so-called Greater Cambridge was the way to go. Labour and the Lib Dems on the City Council have said that's the way to go. The hold-up does appear to be, at the minute, the Tories in South Cambridgeshire. Mm. I think they're concerned about how you scale that up in terms of things like social care, whether the economies of scale would add up if you shrunk the County Council down to the Greater Cambridge area. But certainly the debate is, I think, or the momentum is behind a unitary, but again, in terms of timescale and the pace of getting that done, that's anyone's guess.
I wonder, but I spoke to Vince Cable when he was in the city quite a while ago now, three or four months back, I think, wasn't it? And I put to him the question as to whether or not, you know, we should go ahead. And his the gruff response to the question was that we needed a local government reorganisation like a hole in the head, which doesn't seem to suggest that any particular government is going to be wanting to do that any day soon.
Well, this is the biggest barrier to a unitary authority is ultimately it requires an Act of Parliament to deliver it.
Mm. And we can't just expect that just for Cambridge. There'd be other areas, of course, as well. You know,
exactly.
Much as we like to think we're an important place, you know, there's other cities with similar concerns.
Exactly. Mm. And Eric Pickles, who was, obviously until the dissolution of Parliament, the Community Secretary, went on record prior to the last general election saying no local government reorganisations, which is why there were no steps taken by Parliament and central government towards a unitary authority other than the city deal.
But it's strange because at the same time you're seeing local councils from time to time putting forward suggestions of merging this service with the neighbouring council. We've seen the police do that as well, which seems to be, you know, doing it through the back door without really sort of doing this whole joined up thing, yeah. Which kind of started this conversation.
I think it's, you know, if you get to the same aim where the councils are working together, like for the next local plan, South Cambridgeshire and Cambridge will do it together. I mean, there will be a built-in county council transport element as well. So I guess there is an argument to be made that if you get to the right destination, it doesn't matter what route you take, you know. So I think they do acknowledge that and they are making improvements, but you're right that, you know, to be a unitary in all but name, why not just be a unitary? Mm.
I'm just wondering, Hester, do you guys at the Cambridge Cycling Campaign have a list of, you know, your top five routes that you'd like improvements for?
It's a question that comes up periodically. Mostly what people want is their own route to work or route to school.
Yes.
Or it's quite hard to get a consensus. I think at the moment a big issue for us is Milton Road. So that's one of the schemes that's got funding from the city deal, which is another source of...
Now, which part of the Milton Road is this? It's quite a long stretch, obviously.
I'm not sure it has been... our focus would be for the full length of it.
Okay.
Within the city deal, I don't think it's been defined because there are very few details on any of the schemes that have been put forward and prioritised at the moment. So what is on the city deal is a bus priority, but we're saying that cycling should be a part of that as well, part of the improvements, because cycling on Milton Road at the moment, it's a very busy road. You've got some very poor cycling facilities, some on the pavement shared with pedestrians, which obviously pedestrians don't like. You lose priority when at side roads, or you can go on the road and you're sharing space with cars and buses, and obviously nobody with children or who feels slower or vulnerable is going to want to cycle in that kind of environment. So we think that there's scope for more people to feel safe with separate from both cars and from pedestrians, to be able to make journeys and increase the number of people cycling rather than taking the car because they don't feel safe enough doing it.
Anthony, I'll bring you in quickly. We should probably take some travel after that.
Yeah, and one thing I'd say to your listeners is the Cambridge Cycling Campaign does an essential has an essential role here in the city to basically scrutinise what the local councils do on all things housing and transport planning, and they filter things into a manner that actually most people can understand. So do check out their website and do follow them on Twitter and Facebook.
OK, thank you everyone for the time being. We've got a couple of messages which have come in. First of all, James says he agrees with the fact that, the supposition I suppose, rather than the fact, the tone of some local tweets on the general election very much should be party politics, or our party politics, as opposed to issues. And we appear to have had a good luck message from Julian Huppert, the Liberal Democrat candidate in the election, which probably means, for the sake of political balance, I now have to put out a plea for the other four candidates to wish us luck as well. We've got the first of our election studio programmes on Sunday morning, 10 o'clock. Sebastian Kindersley, who's representing the Lib Dems in South Cambridgeshire, also Dan Grief, who is the Labour candidate in South Cambridgeshire. Hopefully, before we get to polling day, we'll have all of the, certainly the city and the South Cambridgeshire representatives. We've asked them all to take part. And if you need to know who they all are, we've got a full list of the declared parliamentary candidates on the Cambridge 105 website, cambridge105.fm. But we are doing right now the election panel, as we're doing every Wednesday between now and polling day. With me, I've got Anthony Carpin, social media media, trainer and community activist. Also John Vale, who's the Cambridge News political reporter, and Hester Wells of the Cambridge Cycling Campaign. John, I'd like to turn to you because you had a pretty interesting story over the weekend about empty property in the city, which caught my eye. And it was relating to foreign investors buying new properties. Not quite non-doms, but I guess the next best thing as far as Cambridge is concerned. What's the basic tenor of the story?
Well, you've summarised it pretty well. The very basic premise is that I think the scale of overseas investment in Cambridge property is very large. I think Savills told us around up to 30% of new builds are sold to.
And what's happening here is this, because when I lived in London, this was the sort of thing which was starting to happen. We're not talking oligarchs, we're talking people buying the London equivalents of the terraced houses we have around us here in Cambridge. But this is new build, some of this, is it?
It is, yeah, because it's the growth of the city, and it's very easy to turn around and maintain. And I'm not going to sit here and say that the story is conclusive, because it wasn't. But we did think about it, and the reason we ran it is twofold, really.
So this was one of these ones you were sitting at the news desk and chatting with your colleagues and saying, well, should we go in this direction with it, or what shall we do?
Yeah, we do have discussions. We're not that rogue. We're not the news of the world. But the compelling evidence for us was this discrepancy between the number of new builds and the electoral roll data. I think it was about a 600 difference between the number of new homes versus those registered on the electoral roll, which is unique in all the city wards. There is not that discrepancy between housing growth and numbers on the electoral roll, but also it's the way that Cambridge property is being marketed overseas.
So people like the estate agents involved, I think you mentioned Savills there, but there's others obviously around the city who would be involved in selling these new properties. Are they deliberately sending leaflets in the direction of potential I want to call them fat cats, but they're probably not, are they? People who are coming from overseas and buying up the property, are they actively encouraging it?
Yeah, well, it is very common knowledge to the certain market of overseas investors that to buy a house in Cambridge within 5 years you'll have made about 35%, and that's a very good investment opportunity.
It's a darn sight better than you get in the post office savings account at the moment.
Just
I think that's for sure. Anthony?
Yeah, but housing used to be my old policy area during my civil service days, so I worked with a series of housing ministers in the latter part of the last decade. One of the things that local historian Alan Brigham mentioned on his Facebook page was the development at Rustat Road, where the Cambridge Water Company used to be. And he linked to the marketing materials there, and that was very much aimed at overseas properties investors. There was absolutely nothing there aimed at local buyers or encouraging people to who may be potentially interested to say, this is what the local community looks like. You've got Coleridge Rec around the corner, you've got Mill Road just up the road. It was basically saying, this is an extension of the North London line. Oh, and here's a picture of St John's College.
Which is a complete opposite. I guess we all see them. The press releases come in. Here's a new development for Cambridge. It's going to be affordable housing, and there's social housing involved. And of course, we're going to have plenty of space for students, not too much parking, and all that sort of routine. But on the other hand, the other side, those people who are actually on the receiving end of the sales materials, it's a completely different story.
Absolutely. And one of the things I found when I was working in Whitehall in housing policy is just how powerful the lobbyists were, and the strength of the financial interests in within that field, alongside just how limited the powers housing ministers actually had. So in terms of the housing problems in Cambridge, the real power in terms of doing something about the overheating property market and the housing bubble that we have here actually lies with the Treasury, and also at a wider policy level, perhaps some international cooperation on how to deal with these international property bubbles.
Isn't that also like a variation? Now, there's a lot of news about the in the news around the time of the budget of the Google tax. You almost need it at the other end, don't you, by the sounds of things, to just make sure property goes in the right place.
But this also links to some of the transport, in particular the rail links issue. And one of the campaigns I'm trying to link into some of the City Deal work is the Haverhill Rail campaign. They've done some excellent work in Haverhill on the engineering side of how to reopen the old rail link and then link it ultimately through to Sudbury and Colchester. Now, if that goes ahead as part of the City Deal, that could potentially link Cambridge and Colchester all the way through to Chelmsford, which would mean Anglia Ruskin students just over the road from here could link up, and you could potentially have direct rail services between Cambridge and Chelmsford, i.e. the two main campuses of that university.
And would there be enough genuinely of them? There must be, I guess there probably is, isn't there? I'm trying to think as to how many hundreds of students are involved. But I guess by the time you add the two of them together, that's quite an opportunity.
Well, it's not just the students, Julian. It's also...
So tutors move from one to the other as well?
Well, it's not just the university. So, for example, it would also unlock some of the opportunities around redeveloping Haverhill, for example, as well as reducing the huge amount of traffic on the road that links Cambridge to Haverhill as well.
And Hester, you mentioned earlier that this was one of the issues which was, I guess, the key for you, obviously, cycling and transport for Cambridge. Cycling is important, but also the housing and the transport and getting people into the city and into affordable homes.
Yes, that's been one of the issues around the City Deal, is councillors not believing that people will cycle more than a couple of miles. It's perfectly possible. In fact, lots of people every day do cycle from the closest towns and villages into Cambridge. But there's also the potential for multimodal journeys. So, for example, the census figures probably underestimate cycling in Cambridge because of the number of people who cycle to the train station and then get the train into London. So obviously the train is the longest bit of their journey, and that's what they record.
And there's also, of course, the stack of cycles that you see at any time of day. I've been at Cambridge Station at 4 a.m. in the morning and I've seen it absolutely still filled with cycles. Presumably people coming in the opposite direction and cycling from Cambridge Station to their place of work.
I think that there's a lot of... people travel from Ely into Cambridge and then so there's, you can park your bike at the station and you can have a bike at each end, or they have folding bikes. This was one of the things that was raised at Hustings yesterday, was the possibility of one of the questions about a Boris bike style hire scheme.
This was Phil Rogers' daughter, wasn't it? Philly was in here last week, who asked that particular question.
Yes, and...
would it work? Could we have Boris bikes? Note how, like everybody else, we don't mention the name of the sponsor. Even though it's recently changed, nobody actually knows who the sponsor is because we all call them Boris bikes.
Yes. What was raised by to the candidates yesterday is the Boris bike scheme is very expensive, and I would want to see that money put to cycle infrastructure before it's put towards a hire scheme or public money, because... there's no point encouraging a whole lot of people who aren't used to cycling onto bikes only to put them into the sort of general traffic around Cambridge. I think you need the routes first and then access to bikes.
And I guess it's fair enough to say that most people who want and need a bike in Cambridge probably already has one.
Yeah. But one thing was raised was the possibility of Brompton Docks at the station, maybe also the Park and Ride. So I think this
Brompton Docks. Are these the folding bikes? The little ones. Okay.
Yeah. So there are Brompton Docks around various train stations in the UK. So yes, it means you can hire a folding bike and return it to and then return it. So, but it's good exactly for train stations, and it would also work with the Park and Ride and with buses, where you could hire a bike that you can then take on the train or carry around the city on a bus and then cycle when you want to or when you need to. I don't think, as I say, that would open up much for new cycling, but it is a extra thing available to people who cycle or might want to cycle in one direction and then get the bus in the other.
I guess if you have a route, if you have a journey which takes you in sort of a wacky route, if you like, you could just use it on that one stage.
Yeah.
You could take Route R at one point of it, perhaps. It's Anthony and I's favourite mode of transport at the moment. John, just before we finish, and we should close in a moment, I was pondering on this earlier. speculation. Will it be the Sun what won it again? Does the Cambridge News take a political stance at any point as to who we should all vote for? Are we free to make up our own minds?
We don't. No, we don't have the clout. We try and give everyone a fair crack.
Is this sort of like I guess the difference between a regional newspaper and a national newspaper? It's in terms of making those decisions.
Exactly, because you know it's a different audience. You know, I mean, obviously the Telegraph is aimed at a right wing audience, national audience. You know, the Guardian a left wing national audience, whereas we're aimed at a Cambridge audience.
Yes.
So
be more interesting though, because we wouldn't know who you'd go for. Whether it's fairly obvious with the Nationals most of the time.
I'll ask my editor, see if he wants to put his flag on the mast, but I wouldn't imagine I don't think we'll declare our colours this year.
But I think one other final point to add, which has happened in particular both under yourself, John, and also with Chris Havergal, is how you've integrated some of the video footage at council meetings and at debates that have been filmed by Richard Taylor, myself and others.
There was enough trouble getting the cameras to be allowed to be filming in the first place, wasn't there?
There was. Yeah. But the
whole other issue, I think.
But the point being is that through the Cambridge News' website, they're able to amplify the film footage that we take, and it means that people can actually see and hear the candidates in their own voices, and so they're more able to take a more informed decision on how they vote, rather than being told how to vote by, you know, whether it's any of us or a national newspaper or whoever.
I mean, that's the point, because again, what part of the reasons I was late, as well as traffic, was I was filing the story about last night's hustings at the cycling campaign, and I think I got to about 600 words, which is quite an expansive article by Cambridge News standards, but I'd barely scratch the surface, whereas what Anthony and Richard do is, you know, I can give, you know, that potted version, if you like, what I believe is the other key clinical points, but then if people do want that depth and say, well, I don't trust that John Vale, then they can watch the video footage themselves and make their own
decision. And they make their own decision. I guess, in a way, you know, for example, the headlines we take during the day are 2 minutes long. That's the length that it's decided that they'll be. Another station, which is more emphasis on news, might take the decision to have, you know, 7-minute bulletins at all times. We tend to lengthen them at the peak times like drive and breakfast, and then have the shorter ones during the day. But there is this expansive opportunity everywhere to get that through. Well, look, thank you all very much for joining us on the election panel this week. Hopefully we'll see some, if not all of you, back between now and polling day. But for the time being, we thank Anthony Carpin,
thank you.
Hester Wells,
thank you.
And John Vale.
Thank
and
you.
We'll bring everybody the travel news, which I know you're looking forward to.